This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Culture and Society and News for Young People. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Leo XIV posted on the platform X on Thursday to mark the solemnity of Corpus Christi, a major Catholic feast celebrating the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. The solemnity is observed as a holiday in the Vatican and in some dioceses will be celebrated this year on Sunday, June the 22nd. Writing on the platform, formerly known as Twitter, the Pope said, "May the solemnity of Corpus Christi renew our faith in the Lord, who is truly present among us under the appearance of bread and wine. May the Lord give us the strength to overcome every discouragement so that we may always fulfill His will," Pope Leo wrote. On Sunday, the Pope will preside at Mass to mark the solemnity of Corpus Christi in the Basilica of St. John Lateran in Rome and take part in the Eucharistic procession to the Basilica of St. Mary Major. The Mass will begin at 5 p.m. local time in Rome. This Thursday, June the 19th, marks the 43rd anniversary of Pope Leo XIV's ordination to the priesthood. Kelsey Garcia reports.
In 1982, then Father Robert Francis Prevost, now Pope Leo XIV, was ordained a priest. Archbishop Jean Jadot of Belgium, who at the time was pro-president of the Secretariat for Non-Christians, presided over the Mass. On Father Prevost's commemorative ordination card were words from St. Augustine's Sermon 339. It read, "For me to feed all of you with ordinary bread is something I cannot do. Yet this word is your portion. I feed you from the same table which nourishes me. I am your servant." And the image the newly ordained priest chose for the card was a 15th century Russian icon of the Last Supper. At 27 years old, Father Prevost was ordained a priest. He had already studied canon law at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome. And, 5 years prior, he had entered the Order of St. Augustine and made his final solemn vows in 1981. 4 years later, in 1985, he would be sent as a missionary to Peru, serving in the mission of Chulucanas in the Puria region. Coming full circle 41 years after Father Prevost was ordained in the Chapel of St. Monica, Pope Francis assigned that same chapel to the newly created Cardinal Robert Prevost on the 30th of September, 2023. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
On the anniversary of his priestly ordination, Pope Leo XIV traveled to the town of Santa Maria di Galleria in the northern outskirts of Rome to visit Vatican Radio's Shortwave Transmission Center and to meet with the staff of the center. In his remarks, he expressed gratitude for the work carried out at the center with fidelity and continuity, even on a feast day, and for a service that reaches places where few broadcasters are able to go. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
The Holy See press office informed journalists of the excursion with a post on Telegram, revealing that the Holy Father met with the staff of the center, conversed with them, visited the transmitter hall designed by architect Pierluigi Nervi, and sat in the control room for shortwave transmissions. The radio center was inaugurated by Pope Pius XII in 1957, and the last time a pope visited the center in the area of Santa Maria di Galleria was when Pope St. John Paul II did so in 1991. During Pope Leo's visit, the press office note stated he inquired about the operation of the antennas, broadcasts, and the digital disaster recovery system. Pope Leo, the statement noted, suggested that during his missionary work in Latin America and Africa, it was invaluable to be able to receive Vatican Radio's shortwave transmissions, which reach places where few broadcasters can go, and he reaffirmed the missionary value of communication. After imparting his apostolic blessing upon all those present, Pope Leo XIV expressed thanks for the work carried out with fidelity and continuity, even on a feast day like today, the Solemnity of Corpus Christi. In addition, the statement noted that the Pope also had taken the opportunity to examine the extraterritorial zone, whose status dates back to agreements with the Italian government in 1951. For this area, and based on the motu proprio Fratello Sole, a project is under consideration to install an agrivoltaic system which would provide not only electrical power to the radio station, but also complete energy self-sufficiency for the Vatican City-State. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
The Vatican on Wednesday unveiled a video urging the faithful to support Pope Leo XIV in his mission of spreading the gospel and helping our brothers and sisters in need through the Peter's Pence collection. The one-minute video, which has been posted on our website, vaticannews.va, urges people to donate to the PayPal fund used to support church activities and charity work. The Peter's Pence collection is normally taken during the last weekend in June, usually on June the 29th, Solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul. Here is the audio version of the video adapted to our listeners in Africa.
With a small step forward, Pope Leo XIV presents himself to the world.
Peace be with you all.
And from that moment on, his steps become ours.
I come to you as the brother who desires to be the servant of your faith and your joy, walking with you on the path of God's love, where he wants us all to be united in one family.
With your donation to the Peter Spence collection, support the Holy Father's steps in a concrete way. You'll be helping the Pope to proclaim the gospel around the world and also to extend a helping hand to our brothers and sisters in need.
Brothers and sisters, this is the hour for love.
Support Pope Leo XIV's steps. Conduct your parish, diocese, or Catholic institution on how you can donate to the Peter Spence collection. Thank you.
You can also donate to the Peter Spence Fund by visiting the website www.obolodisanpietro.va/en.html. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu has ordered a crackdown on gangs after at least 150 people were killed during recent attacks in the country's north-central Benue state. During a visit to the state on Wednesday, Mr. Tinubu directed security agencies to hunt down the perpetrators of the attack, which happened on June the 13th and 14th. The president has faced growing pressure over a worsening security crisis in Africa's most populous nation. In a post on the social media platform X, he promised justice for the victims. Assailants stormed Benue State's Yelwata community from Friday night till Saturday morning, opening fire on villagers who were asleep and setting their homes ablaze. Pope Leo XIV condemned the massacre and offered prayers for the murdered Christians during the Angelus on Sunday, noting the extreme cruelty with which they were murdered and that most of the victims were housed at a local Catholic mission. The family of former Zambian President Edgar Lungu delayed the repatriation of his body from South Africa for a second time on Wednesday in a dispute with the country's current leader over the details of the funeral. The family's lawyer said they will not bring Mr. Lungu's body home as planned on Wednesday because they don't want President Hakainde Hichilema to attend the late president's funeral. Mr. Lungu, who was 68, died in a South African hospital of an undisclosed illness on June the 5th and was meant to be honored with a state funeral, which President Hichilema was due to preside over. According to reports, Mr. Lungu and Mr. Hichilema were bitter political rivals. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
This is Culture and Society, and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pax Christi International is a Catholic peace movement whose mission is to transform a world shaken by violence, terrorism, deepening inequality, and global insecurity. Pax Christi recently created the Catholic Institute for Nonviolence with the objective of making nonviolence research, resources, and experience more accessible to Catholic Church leaders, communities, and institutions in order to deepen Catholic understanding of and commitment to the practice of the gospel nonviolence. Marie Denise, who once served as co-president of Pax Christi International from 2007 to 2019, is currently the senior program director of the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative. She spoke to Vatican Radio's Chaos Gassi about what motivated Pax Christi to create this section of the organization.
Pax Christi has, since it was founded 80 years ago, has had a long, deep commitment to nonviolence. It was practiced in different ways in different parts of the world. We work on every continent and have maybe 100-and-something member organizations. After the turn of the millennium, we began to collect from members around the world stories about why they used nonviolence. Was it because of their faith? Was it because they knew nonviolence would work? Was it because it was the only choice? And we, after we collected those stories for a while, we asked the Vatican if that was then the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace would co-sponsor with us a small conference to hear more stories from parts of the world where violence was very intense, war zones all over the world. And we did co-sponsor that conference with the Pontifical Council. And from that conference came a program called the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative, because what we heard from people who came from everywhere, from Sri Lanka to Afghanistan and Sudan and Colombia and Guatemala and all over the world, was nonviolence is the only way forward, that we have to learn how to deal with conflict without violence. And so we started the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative then in about 2016 with the goal of helping to move nonviolence more to the center of Catholic teaching and understanding and practice. And after several years of that, as we began to see how what good research there is now on the effectiveness of nonviolent strategies, the importance of addressing the root causes of violence and so on, we wanted to find a way to make that research and experience a little bit more accessible to church leaders. We've always thought of the church as, of course, the Vatican and Vatican offices, but also the local church, so bishops, bishops' conferences, religious congregations, universities, and so on. And it seemed that having an institute where we could bring together the best research, the best reflection on gospel nonviolence, bringing theologians and scripture scholars and so on together with the best social science research being done on what we call strategic nonviolence, practices of nonviolence that can actually interrupt, prevent, or deal with violence, and case studies that we, the goal of the institute would be to make that conversation between experience, social sciences, and theology available, accessible to the church. So that's why we started the institute.
And in this research and the work that the Catholic Institute for Nonviolence is doing, I'm sure the topic of nonviolence versus pacifism has come about. What would you describe the difference between those two?
That's a great question, because, yes, we have tended to say that we do not equate pacifism and nonviolence. Obviously, they're related. I think of pacifism as an inspiring personal ethic to which a person or a community can commit themselves. We think of nonviolence as, yes, a commitment to not use violence, but also a full engagement in addressing conflict in an effective way. And we would say that nonviolence is hopefully effective, appropriate most of the time, but there, until we get to a place where we actually understand how nonviolence can work all the time, there may be some occasions to protect vulnerable communities and so on. There might be a need for some inter-violence in the short term, always with the goal of eliminating violence, of finding other ways to deal with conflict.
And in recent years, because we do see, especially now, the world, I mean, I'm sure it's always been this case, but now with media, we know a lot more of the wars that are happening, violence that's happening all around the world. Catholic social teaching and the idea of that with peace, how has that really shifted, or how have you seen through the research, have you seen that change?
We've seen a really significant change that obviously began in the early 20th century, but up until the maybe 1980s, when we saw one revolution after another that was nonviolent be successful. The classics obviously in India, but also in the Philippines, in Poland and Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union and on and on. We began to see that church teaching, which the just war tradition always insisted that violence was a last resort. But it also, there was a tendency for the teaching to say, those teaching, the just war tradition to say, that nonviolence was a personal choice, that it didn't look like it was going to be appropriate for example, for a government that was charged with protecting the people living in a particular part of the world. We began to see that shift. In fact, during what is called the third democratic wave in the 1980s, we began the 80s thinking the world was just in a terrible place with dictatorships all over the place. By the end of the 80s, we saw a real shift. And the Catholic Church has been identified as one of three or four main of the sort of ways and reasons why that shift happened, because the church began to teach nonviolence, began to support nonviolent movements, began to see the connection between the gospel and nonviolence. But still, in the 80s, there was still a tendency to say nonviolence is for individuals, to make that commitment. Governments probably will need to really rely on the just war tradition. I think in the last 15 years, that has really shifted. We see that nonviolence more and more is moving to the center of Catholic teaching on violence and war. And, of course, we're not only talking about war when we talk about nonviolence. It's a response to a way of dealing with conflict at an interpersonal level all the way to open war. But I think there has been a significant shift in Catholic teaching, even in 15 years, when we would talk about nonviolence in the early 2000s, for example, there was a tendency for leaders to kind of pat us on the head and say, that's really nice, but it's not very realistic. It's kind of idealistic. And that is just not the case anymore. There's been the classic research that was done in 2010, I think.
Senior Program Director of the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative, Marie Denise, talking there to Vatican Radio's Kelsey Garcy about what motivated Pax Christi to create the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative. And that is all we have time for in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. As reported previously, Pope Leo XIV on Monday praised the heroic faith and courage of Blessed Floribert Bwana Chui, a young Congolese customs officer who was beatified on Sunday afternoon at the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls, speaking during an audience with pilgrims from the Democratic Republic of Congo who had attended the beatification. The Holy Father held up the new blessed as a model for young people in his native DRC and all of Africa. Joseph Tulloch followed that story.
Pope Leo XIV on Monday recalled the holiness and prayerfulness of the newly blessed Floribert Boigna Tshui.
Je veux accueillir avec joie après la béatification de Floribert Boigna Tshui.
This African martyr in a continent rich in youth, the Pope said, shows how young people can be a leaven of peace, unarmed and disarming. This Congolese layman highlights, the Pope continued, the precious value of the witness of lay people and young people. In his remarks, the Pope posed the question, where did a young man draw the strength to resist corruption, so entrenched in the prevailing mindset, incapable of any violence? The choice to keep his hands clean as a customs officer, the Pope continued, was formed by a conscience shaped through prayer, listening to the word of God and communion with his brothers and sisters.
Par la prière, l'écoute de la parole de Dieu, la communion avec les frères.
Pope Leo noted that the Blessed Floribert lived the spirituality of the community of Sant'Egidio, which, he recalled, the late Pope Francis used to summarise with three P's, prayer, poor and peace. Recording that the poor were central to the new blessed's life, Pope Leo said that Floribert had offered a commitment and closeness to street children who were driven to Goma by war, many of whom were orphans. He loved them with the charity of Christ, said the Pope. He cared about them and was concerned with their human and Christian formation. Pope Leo emphasized that Floribert's strength grew through fidelity to prayer and to the poor, and that he was a man of peace. In a region as afflicted as Kivu, torn by violence, the Pope highlighted, he carried on his struggle for peace with gentleness, serving the poor, practicing friendship and encounter in a divided society. The young man, Pope Leo insisted, had a dream nourished by the words of the gospel and closeness to the Lord. Many young people felt abandoned and without hope, but Floribert listened to Jesus' words, I will not leave you orphans, I will come to you. Pope Leo then stressed that no land is abandoned by God. The Pope prayed that through the intercession of the Virgin Mary and the newly blessed Floribert, long-awaited peace might soon come to Kivu, to Congo, and to all of Africa. I'm Joseph Tulloch.
In Nigeria, young Catholics in the Archdiocese of Abuja are celebrating a major milestone, 40 years since the founding of the Catholic Youth Organization. The group's president spoke with our correspondent, Delphine Asu, about their activities and the challenges facing the organization. Here is the report.
The Abuja Archdiocesan president of the Catholic Youth Organization of Nigeria, Franklin Ekene, spoke with Vatican Radio on the significance of the Jubilee Year of Hope to the young people. He gave an overview of their activities so far this year.
For the young people of Abuja Archdiocese, so the Jubilee Year of Hope, as declared by Pope Francis, it's a year where he encouraged the young persons not to lose hope. Our hope is one element that cannot be taken away from us. And this is something that we have actually held very dear and close to our hearts. It's something that we have used as a propellant to whatever dream and aspiration we have for ourselves and for the church and for the organization. We celebrated the Jubilee Year of the Teenagers, where we had the sacrifice of praise. We take spirituality very seriously. And that sacrifice of praise was a massive event, which was a tripartite event. It was a day we mourned and had a wake for late Pope Francis. And just as the Archbishop has declared, youth masses across all parishes within the Archdiocese. And then to that, the organization has tried as much as possible to make sure that the youth are in charge of this thing by actually going away from just having the mass, which is the most important and the center of it all, to have what we call the faith clinic. In most parishes, you see, you have Bible sharing, you have sections where you talk about the church, talk about the doctrines, and people have to share and then come in and own these processes and ask questions where they are confused. So it's an innovation that has started and it's gaining serious momentum across.
The 40th anniversary of the CYON was also an opportunity to examine the challenges prevalent among the members of the organization.
Okay, the major challenge within the youth and the church is identity for me. The youth are finding it very difficult to actually own an identity, because I will tell you for sure, as their leader, we discuss and we engage, and there's a whole lot of confusion as to what is even the role of the youth generally. So that has thrown a lot of persons just being on their own, doing their own things, and that leads to lack of coordination that our parents complain about. So I would want to urge, it's a very big issue, not just the monetary aspect, which is part of it, I will tell you, but let the church find a way to give the youth an identity that they can hold on to and use their energy channel into this identity and make something out of it. And then, like I said, funding is part of it. The youth also look out for empowerment, they look out for employment, and they look out for ways to stand on their own. So these are the challenges that we want addressed.
Other young persons present added their voices and also considered possible solution to the problem of unemployment.
Unemployment, because most youths are unemployed. So whenever you go to any parish and ask a youth member to come and identify with the youth, he will tell you that, I don't have money for transportation, I don't have money to pay dues, I don't have money to pay for levies. So this has been a very big challenge to the youth, unemployment.
Number one, which is unemployment, that is a major issue that is affecting youth in Nigeria. But we've been told that we should learn skills. If there's no white-collar job, we should learn skills with that. It will help us to excel.
One thing I would say regarding the youth is that youth have the spirit of willingness. With the Catholic youth, you tend to achieve this because of what you get right from when you are little. I use myself as an example. I started being a youth member when I was 14. You know, going about attending youth program, it helped me in my own personal life, making decisions.
Sion has been a pace setter. For instance, for people like me, Sion has built my self-confidence and stage management, how to talk in public speaking.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine Asu reporting.
And that's all for this edition of News for Young People. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.